Welcome back to another edition of the Around the League podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by the great, well-built Chris Wessling.
That's just untrue, but thank you.
Very, very, I saw on Facebook you are now in a softball league in Santa Monica.
Thanks to Rhino.
Rhino King, Jim Rhino King, who is one of our editors at NFL.com. You are assimilating into California culture. That is very exciting.
That was the one thing I needed, a softball team. That's what got me assimilated into Tybee culture in the first place.
Yes, an avid softball player. Also, you're an avid cornhole player, one of the greats of all time, according to yourself. So I'm looking forward to getting some lessons from the Babe Ruth of cornhole.
Lessons will be forthcoming.
All right, so it's Wes and I today. It was supposed to be Mark and I, but we had a little change of plans. But we also will be calling Greg Rosenthal, our boss, who is in Canton at the Hall of Fame, for all the festivities there. A couple of bits of housekeeping. Again, we are on iTunes now. Alex Wilk, behind the glass, got it done. A man of integrity and preparation and good cheer. So you can go there and subscribe and download and also rate us. According to Wilk Ty, the higher rating we get, the more love we get on the iTunes page, and that's good. So if you could do that. And, you know, while we're here, thank you very much to our listeners. Even from going back to the debate club days, who, you know, chimed in a lot on Twitter to Mark and I saying, how do we get the show? And now we have the show on a larger platform. So this is exciting.
Did you know, I checked my phone last night and my podcast app, we were the number one podcast on the new, what is new and noteworthy.
Well, hello, Larry. Did you hear that, Wilk?
Yeah, I made that happen, so I was aware of
pulling the strings of the great and powerful Oz.
Yeah.
The next thing we need to do is update the logo, which looks like it was made by a seventh grader in one of those computer workshop classes in junior high.
Yeah, my favorite thing about the logo is that it's quite clearly a college football and not an NFL football. That's quite an oversight that we've made there.
All right, so, okay, we're working on that, too. So we're working out the kinks, but the big stuff is there now. We're on iTunes, so let's keep rolling with that. Today, we have several topics to get to. We're going to talk about QB battles. We're going to talk about some teams that maybe are a little bit under the radar in training camp right now. But the place we need to start, I think, is Riley Cooper. Again, we talked about him on Wednesday. Riley Cooper, he of the racial slur at the Kenny Chesney concert. The Eagles teammates initially seemed to get behind him and say, you know, we know who Riley is. On Wednesday night, that's how it was playing out. And then on Thursday, we heard from LaShawn McCoy, who maybe painted the other side of the picture, which was, I lost a friend and I can't trust him, or whatever exactly he said, but it was along those lines. Now Friday comes, and Wes, you were working this morning. What happened today?
The Eagles sent Riley Cooper away from the team to get some counseling. And it seemed to be setting up a situation where they might cut ties with him down the road.
That's certainly, when I saw it on Twitter, that's the first thing I thought. I know Chip Kelly had said initially he wasn't going anywhere, but once you send a guy away, it seems like the next step.
Yeah, and I read Tom Pelissero of USA Today just came out with a column where he had interviewed a few executives around the league, and they seemed to be unanimous in the opinion that there's no way the Eagles could get anything in a trade for Cooper right now. But they also said that if Cooper was released, he would be picked up. It might not be right away, but he would definitely get another shot.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. The guy, while he's not an elite player by any stretch, he has talent and he's young. And, in this league, talent carries the day, as we've seen many times before. And, you know, I was a little curious about this this assistance thing where he's going off-site. I don't know what exactly he can be assisted with, other than maybe learning how to build a time machine. I don't like how can a man get assistance for this type of situation? I don't understand that.
It reminds me a little bit this situation of the Big Ben situation, where the Steelers actually put Big Ben on the trade block and nobody would touch him because it was just too volatile of a situation at the time. And I bet, looking back on it, some teams probably wish they would have looked into a trade.
This was, if you're referring to the bar incident during
the bar bathroom incident.
The bar bathroom incident. If you really want to know more, you could look up on the internet details of that wonderful incident for Big Ben. But that was a situation where he became this toxic figure, and he got suspended for it, which obviously Riley Cooper will not be suspended for it. But Yeah, it just goes to show you, you know, who talks about that anymore with Big Ben. He's a guy that he moved on from it. He won a Super Bowl several months later, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So Riley Cooper is still, this is a unique situation, whereas Roethlisberger was implicated in some pretty terrible things. Cooper, it's one of those touchstone type things that everybody has an opinion on, and it's just, you know, there's a video involved which made it easier to go viral when it first hit on Wednesday. So, you know, the one thing that's interesting to me, and, you know, I understand the Eagles are in a tough spot here. When one of your players uses, you know, the biggest racial slur in this country, and a lot of the players on that team are African-American, it's a nightmare scenario PR-wise. But by having him step away from the team, and I know Cooper's the guy that came out and said he was leaving, but I'm sure it was something like, Riley, all right, let's step away for a while. You know, are they extending this narrative unnecessarily? Because now what's going to happen is he will go away for however long, whether it's a week or 3 weeks or who knows how long. But once he returns, it's a new story again. And all the players get asked about it again. And Cooper has to have another press conference to talk about it again. So was this, from a team standpoint, was it wise to kind of extend this on their own?
I don't think it is. To me, it just seems like they're trying to make the story go away for now. But like you said, it's going to have to be addressed again. And the teammates are going to be asked about it again. Riley Cooper is, of course, going to be asked about it again. So it seems whenever they do bring him back, we're starting anew. And I don't know how that solves anything.
No, I don't know either. So, you know, that's the big story in the NFL this week. And one of those stories that's crossed over from the NFL to your mom knows about it. One of those type of situations. But as far as actual NFL goes, I mean, you know, maybe let's talk about it. I know Wilk on Wednesday expressed his anger that we had talked about the New York Jets two episodes in a row.
Angry.
I mean, the guy's filled with fury. He's upset because Mark Sanchez is from USC and he's become a whipping boy for this league. And I'm, as a Jets fan, upset about it. But he got to me a little bit. Wilk got to me. He's right. We shouldn't be talking about the Jets all the time when they're probably an also-ran in the league this
year.
So, what, you know, Wilk, I don't need the peanut gallery either, though.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm bowing down. You're right. I don't need you then to chime in, you know, with your crown on.
I just don't appreciate being called angry when I'm very calm on this side of the glass. Wilk, very calm.
All right. You're the best.
Thank you.
But, okay, so let's talk about some teams that maybe are under the radar. And, you know, as we spoke about downstairs, there seems to be what we can call a Bermuda Triangle in the southeastern area of this country, and it's three teams: the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Tennessee Titans, and the Carolina Panthers. Three NFL franchises that do not get enough love. So let's talk about them, Wes.
As a transplant from Tybee Island, Georgia myself, I'm aware that these teams do not get enough love, and I'm always happy to talk about them. Would much rather talk about the Panthers, Titans, and Jaguars than the New York Jets.
I know. Actually, I find myself writing more content on the Jets than any other team, only because Wes has made a hardline stance not to write about the Jets since coming over to NFL.com.
So let's start with you, Dan. What is your feeling on Cam Newton this year?
Well, you know what? I'm a Cam Newton apologist. I've always been a Cam Newton apologist. Maybe that's somehow connected to the fact that he's a fantasy football darling for me, and he's won titles for me with those epic November and December runs where he takes the Panthers from 2-8 to 7-9, which I've enjoyed over the past couple seasons. But I really do think he's in a good spot right now, because he is the guy that's forgotten among these young quarterbacks. And having another year of maturity, and when you combine that with his physical skills, which to me, I kind of think he's peerless at his position in terms of when you combine the speed and power and, you know, his just ability to take over a game. Maybe RG3 is now in that conversation also when he's 100%. But I think Newton is the guy that I love to watch more than anyone in the league. He came out today. He spoke to Sterling Sharp on Inside Training Camp Live, and he had this to say.
I just think it's time for me. And, you know, it's no more excuses in my part. You know, first year is gone. Second year is gone. You know, now I'm considered somewhat of a veteran to these guys. You know, so, you know, taking accountability on this offense and as his team is big for me. And that's what I wanted to come back and be one of my staples to get better.
So, you know, there is that lip service. I don't know. But I do think he's potentially a guy under the radar that could have a big season.
The Panthers are my pick for the team that will come out of nowhere to make the playoffs in the NFC this year. Not just because Cam played so well down the stretch last year, but if you remember early in the year, they lost a lot of games by a touchdown or less. Their kicker got fired for blowing a game or two.
Yep. They had that grisly loss to Atlanta that they had no business losing.
Right, and after they moved Luke Kuechly to middle linebacker, they were a top 10 NFL defense. So this is a very intriguing team to me.
So do you see, if you say they're a playoff team, I mean, you're saying this is a team that can win 9 or 10 games and hang in their division? They have that type of ability?
Absolutely. I've picked them only behind the Falcons in the NFC South. I think the Saints have too many questions on defense. The Panthers are a more complete team right now.
What about the idea of the Panthers not doing enough to surround Newton with talent? You know, I think Newton's gotten himself in trouble last year, specifically in the early part of last year when he was trying to do too much. You know, they didn't go out and get him another wide receiver. And you have Steve Smith, who's another one of my favorite players. But, you know, he's entering his age 34 season. Is that going to be a situation?
I think if you believe Steve Smith is still a number one receiver, and we both do, and if you have Greg Olsen at tight end, you don't need to have the best second wide receiver in the league. I think Brandon LaFell is good enough. It would be nice if one of either Ted Ginn or Dominic Hickson or Armonte Edwards, I wouldn't hold my breath on that one. If one of those guys stepped up as a third receiver, would be nice. But I think they have the weapons. They do need Jonathan Stewart healthy. He's a better back than D'Angelo Williams when he's healthy. So they need that. But if they're all healthy, that's a good enough offense to get to the playoffs.
And who knows, maybe if they didn't give D'Angelo Williams such a terrible contract a few years back, they would have had some money to go get a wide receiver this year.
That's a good point.
Okay, so moving forward, the Titans, okay? We got another team that, you know, you look at them on paper and you think maybe they can contend for a playoff spot, right?
Right. They have the talent at running back and wide receiver. Delanie Walker's a bit of a question mark at tight end because he's never started before. But what I found interesting was Sean Jefferson, the wide receivers coach, kind of went off on Justin Hunter this week, the rookie. Right. And I've seen other sites kind of blowing that out of proportion. That's just Sean Jefferson's MO. He likes to light a fire under young guys. He did it with Titus Young in Detroit. That didn't work out quite as well.
Oh, my.
But, yeah.
I don't know if that was on him, though.
I think Kendall Wright's lost 15 pounds, which he definitely needed to lose because he couldn't make plays after the catch last year.
Yeah.
They have some interesting skill position players on offense.
And it's easy to forget Kenny Britt's season last year was wiped out, but you go back to Kenny Britt before the ACL injury in September 2011, he was turning into a monster. And now having another year full health, as long as he keeps his head on straight, which is obviously a big question mark with him, he could be a dynamic dude. But, you know, it all goes back also to the quarterback. And, you know, is Jake Locker the guy? Because you could, you know, I agree. I think this is a team that could be a potential 5 or 6 seed. But at the same time, they only go as far as Locker progresses. And he has weapons around him. He's got Chris Johnson, who's, you know, talking about 2,000 yards again. All right, Chris. But he has these receivers, and he has a new offensive line, interior offensive line that's very impressive. I mean, it's all there if this guy can progress. Do you see it happening, though?
He's in his third year, and he's still fundamentally flawed with his mechanics and his footwork. I think it's very telling that the Titans are moving to a run-first offense. That tells you what they think of Jake Locker right now.
Right.
He has all the talent in the world, but he's not ready to lead a team, to lead a passing attack that can take a team to the playoffs.
Okay, and then there's the Jaguars, and I don't know. You know, you want Blaine Gabbert, he deserves one more shot at this, but it doesn't seem like it's going to happen for this dude. And, you know, to me, Blaine Gabbert is going to lose this competition to Chad Henne, isn't he?
I think so. And I think I found it interesting when they asked Mike Mularkey earlier in the offseason, who coached the Jaguars last year, his prediction, and he said Chad Henne's a better quarterback than Blaine Gabbert. I thought that was pretty telling since he was part of the regime that drafted Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah.
And, you know, the new coaching staff, the new front office has been so pro-Blaine all offseason, and then they get to training camp and see that he's just not as good as maybe they hoped he would be. I think Chad Henne can move the offense. He'll take too many sacks. He'll throw too many interceptions. He won't be that accurate. But he can get that offense up and down the field, which I don't think Gabbert can do.
It's hard to imagine them not targeting a quarterback next May, right?
100% chance.
Yeah. So, you know, we can't count out Gabbert until we actually see him, at least in preseason games, but it's not looking too well. So that is our update on the Bermuda Triangle. We can check in at some point. I don't know if podcast ratings just dropped through the floor talking about those teams. Wilk, what does your supercomputer say?
Supercomputer has suddenly broken for some reason. I don't know what that means.
That's definitely not a good sign.
Not a good sign.
So speaking of, you know, we were just talking on the QB battle in Jacksonville. There are other QB battles going on right now. So let's go through them. In Buffalo, Wes, I know you had mentioned downstairs E.J. Manuel. What are your thoughts on that situation?
Well, I wrote about this morning. Kevin Cobb, his accuracy's been off. He has never dealt with the blitz well, and that's been an issue already in training camp. Cobb has the second highest sack rate among all active quarterbacks behind David Carr, who was sacked an ungodly amount of times when the Houston Texans franchise just started.
He still can't sleep through the night.
and I don't see that changing for Cobb. E.J. Manuel, on the other hand, the GM came out this week, says he has the it factor. He's going to be the face of the franchise. He's outplayed Cobb the last three or four days of practices. I don't see how that momentum really changes. As Greg likes to say, the tie goes to the rookie now in today's NFL. It wasn't always like that, but it is now. And I would be shocked if Cobb is under center in week one.
You know what? The thing to me, I do think these teams have to be careful with the tie going to the rookie. And I think last year was one of those things where it could instill a false sense of confidence in these coaches and GMs, where you had just a special crop of guys, RG3, Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, the type of guys that could take a team and lead them, you know, into the playoffs. And even a guy like Ryan Tannehill, where it was clear that he had the stuff to hang in the league, even if he wasn't fully developed yet. But, you know, does that mean that every guy should get thrown into the fire now if the incumbent isn't a overwhelming favorite for the job? It just seems to be a risky move. And, you know, that kind of leads us into the Jets, who have – well, we have to talk about the Jets a little bit, Wilk. We won't hang on it, though. Oh, man. All right, he's shooting
daggers.
You know
what? I'm just gonna fade you down here.
all right, you bring all me right, back. Oh, thank you very much. No, with the Jets, we have Geno Smith, who, you know, from all reports, seems to be heading into the driver's seat on this job. I mean, again, there's only so much you could see without training camp, without preseason games. But Mark Sanchez is not having a great training camp from what we're hearing, and Smith is starting to inspire confidence in his teammates, and the coaches are speaking highly of him. So it seems like it's all pointing to the Jets going for that fresh start. But I don't know if Geno Smith's in a good spot there because he doesn't have an offense around him, you know?
The Jets situation is fascinating because what's good for John Idzik isn't necessarily good for Rex Ryan.
Mm-hmm. And we talked
Idzik
about
drafted
that.
Geno Smith, yeah, and Rex Ryan, Sanchez is his guy. I don't know that – what's interesting there also is that Sanchez has the same problem as Cobb. If you blitz him, he just folds.
Right.
He's terrible under pressure, and I don't know how you're going to reverse that. I get your point about the rookies. You can't just rush them in there and point to last year, which was the exception. Those three guys, and if you include Tannehill, four guys, there might not be a single quarterback in this year's draft class that can hang with those guys. So I understand that, but I don't know that there's any sense in running out a veteran quarterback in week one if he can't deal with pressure in the pocket.
Okay, and then over in Philadelphia, when they're not dealing with Riley Cooper madness, you have the Michael Vick versus Nick Foles. What do you see going on there?
I think that's Vick's job to lose, and it looks like he is pulling away quite a bit from Foles, who last year, to me, what the disturbing thing about Foles was he was a check-down machine, and he was brutal in the red zone. I don't see how – after they drafted Matt Barkley, it kind of told me that Foles wasn't their guy.
Right.
So I don't see why they would pick Foles over Vick in this competition.
And one thing I think to keep in mind and to take out of the whole Cooper situation is that, you know, the team – called on Vic to be their leader in that situation, and he spoke for the team, and he had the private conversation with Cooper before Cooper ever spoke to the rest of the teammates in the locker room. The guy, you know, there's plenty of reasons not to like Michael Vick, but from everything we hear, the guy is known as like a respected dude in the locker room. And, you know, when you see what's happening with that team and seeing the team turning to him, it's hard to imagine him then being the backup quarterback.
Right. I agree. That speaks volumes that they're turning to him as a spokesperson.
And then one more quarterback. It's not a quarterback competition because we know Jason Campbell's not going to beat out Brandon Whedon, but you had some thoughts about Peter King, who is, you know, traveling around with his new website, MondayMorningQuarterback.com. And, you know, he usually the part of the King appeal is it's usually a sunny side up type view on things. So when he has a negative take on something, it gets people to look. And he didn't have great things to say about Brandon Whedon.
He said flat out that Whedon is not the answer for the Browns at quarterback. And I'm kind of torn on this because I believe the same thing. Whedon is not the answer. On the other hand, Peter King, as much as we respect him for his sources, and he's very good at what he does when he's reporting. But his history as a talent evaluator is brutal. This is a guy who has advised fantasy owners to draft Eddie Royal and Jabbar Gaffney and Donald Jones. I mean, Peter's forte is not talent evaluation. If he's getting this information from Rob Chudzinski or Michael Lombardi, which he may very well be if he's coming out this strongly, then it's pretty telling.
Yeah.
And, I don't know that the Browns really have that much to look forward to on offense this year.
Yeah, I mean, Whedon's going to get his shot, and it's almost the most he could ask for because with the regime change, it looked for a second there, if it was a better quarterback class, he would have already been supplanted. But he's going to get his shot. It just doesn't seem he might not have a lot of support in the building. Okay, so as we said earlier, Greg Rosenthal, our boss, is in Canton for the Hall of Fame. We need to check in with him. There's a couple things. Actually, I want to talk to him about something that happened last night while I was handling the late news shift. We'll start with that. So, Wilktie, can you give Greg a call?
Let's do it.
Hello.
Greg Rosenthal. This is Dan Hansis with Chris Wessling, the Around the League podcast.
Oh, so we're on.
We're on.
We're doing it.
Tell us what's going on in Canton right now.
Just had a pretty long media session with all the enshrinees. It was pretty cool. Bill Parcells. Someone asked me, like, who's the coolest person to see because you're walking by 30 or 40 Hall of Famers and you know, it's kind of overwhelming. But Bill Parcells, for me, as someone that grew up in the Northeast, is kind of the coolest guy to me.
Yeah, that actually kind of checks out for me, too. When I, having grown up in New York, at the Super Bowl in February, I think it was before the game, we were in a tunnel by the field level at the Superdome, and Parcells came strolling by with a big pair of aviators, and he just had that kind of godlike appeal to a football fan like me. I just got a little starstruck when I saw him.
Yeah, I got that, and just everything. I mean, it's now the kinder, gentler, reflective Parcells, so, I mean, he was great. I could have just sat there and listened to him the whole time. Chris Cardner broke down crying within 2 or 3 minutes of talking about, overcoming his alcohol problems and really had to stop the press conference for a couple minutes. I mean, it was
wow.
More of a casual setting, but he couldn't get it back together. So it's cool seeing these guys, you know, this setting because you realize how much it means to them.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Carter was definitely one of my personal favorite players of the 90s. Once he got his head on straight and went to the Vikings, was there ever a guy that was better at getting his feet in bounds in the back or corner of an end zone than Chris Carter?
Yeah, and I kind of asked him I asked him a few different questions, but one was, you know, what sort of was his style as a player, what defined him, and he kind of joked, but he was just like, you throw it, I catch it. He's like, if someone's on me, I catch it. If someone is if two people are over the top of me, I catch it. If it's away from my body, I catch it. If I'm on the end zone, end zone might not catch it. And it was a pretty good, I felt like that was a pretty good summary of what made him special.
Yeah, I think he probably had the best hands of anyone in his generation. So, you know, it's great that you're out there, Greg, but also we're not completely sure that you're going to be able to give us any production because you had what would be documented as a pretty awful technical issue yesterday.
So you got to bring that up.
Yeah.
Yes, I lost the letter T. I think it might have been a little condensation for water or something, but no, the letter T was no longer working. And the letter T is important. The has the letter T.
Yes.
Rosenthal has the letter T, so you can't log into your computer if that's your last name. So it was a problem. It slowed me down a little, but I'm bouncing back.
I decided that you have turf toe. You are the LaDainian Tomlinson of the Around the League crew. You have been felled by the letter T.
I have a lot of computer problems, I feel like. In general, that sort of follows me around, like the black. I have a friend that always gets injured, so this is like my equivalent of that.
Yeah, and like turf toe is also the injury where it's a legitimate injury, but, you know, nobody, you know, when you hear it explained as the injury, it's not very impressive. But when you say you lose the letter T on your keyboard, that's pretty devastating. But people probably don't take it seriously. That's, you know, that's what we're talking.
No, it's hard enough to get taken seriously as someone that looks like he's 14 years old trying to interview these guys. So losing the letter T is just another thing on top of that.
All right, so what else is going on out there? How is the rest of the weekend going to play out?
They have the Enshrini dinner tonight, which I'm going to go to. They have the luncheon this afternoon, which they do not allow any media at, even our photographer. I did this photo essay kind of going through the hall and picking out some crazy stuff that's going to go up. I'm excited about that.
Nice.
We got the big ceremony tomorrow night with a game on Sunday. I might try to hit up Friendly's restaurant while I'm here. Chris might know a little bit about Friendly's. We might have had that in Cincinnati.
I've spent some time in Friendly's. Yeah.
Friendly's the chain restaurant?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Friendly's was great. I remember going there with my dad after we saw Aliens 3 in the theater. We went to Friendly's. It was one of those moments that sticks with you. So they have that in Canton. Good times.
I can give a preview. You know, I have heard, you know, some inside scoop on who's going to have the long speech. There was one speech that was only 2 minutes long, and they had to tell him to beef it up a little. I know Chris Carter, this isn't, you know, a secret, but Chris Carter is going to close out the day, and that's a big spot. You know, they kind of give it away who they think is going to have the best speech by who's last. They went Warren Sapp second to last, and he was the big star here today. Like, he had the most attention. He pretty much had people laughing for about 45 minutes. But he's going to be second to last, and Chris Carter is going to close it up.
Is Warren Sapp, is he going to be able to keep it together? Because I was watching NFL Network had some type of special on yesterday, you know, walk up to the ceremony, and Sapp just lost it sitting in a studio. I can't imagine what's going to be happening in front of all those people and family members.
Yeah, I thought the same thing when I was, you know, with Chris Carter earlier, too, is that he literally was 2 or 3 minutes into just a pretty casual session with reporters, and he had to stop for a couple minutes. He got so emotional. Sapp, I think, is, you know, he'll cry. It would be interesting to see Bill Parcells cry. He's kind of the one guy you're not really sure. Or Larry Allen. I can't really imagine Larry Allen crying. Like, Larry Allen cracked me up. Like, I went and talked to him for a bit. Every answer was funny and to the point, but it was like four words long. I feel like his speech is not going to involve any crying.
And is Curtis Martin introducing Parcells?
He is not. It is George Martin, actually, who Parcells always kind of talked about as the ultimate Parcells guy, the ultimate giant. But Martin is here, like a lot of the former players. I talked to him a little bit about Parcells today, and, you know, he just, I don't know. I know you're as a big Jets fan, like, you couldn't have a better ambassador than Curtis Martin. He was just very, very impressive.
Yeah, and I'm so, the best part of it is that we took him from your Patriots at the prime of his career, and it will never, you'll never give up. You'll never forget about it, and that's what feels good.
And, yeah, I mean, Parcells and Martin kind of together really kind of kick-started the whole Patriot-Jets thing. I hope someone tomorrow has a speech close to as affecting as Curtis Martin, because to me that goes, I love Hall of Fame weekend. I've never been here, but I always like watching it on TV.
Then we could hear it in your voice.
I thought it was one of the best speeches, I think.
You sound giddy right now, positively.
I am. All right, I'll see you guys Monday.
Okay, thank you, and have fun. Enjoy it.
Kindler, gentler Bill Parcells, no big cars or big cigars and motor cars quotes, or if he doesn't bite as a puppy, he won't bite.
Yeah, well, he was one of the great quote men of all time. I'm sure we'll have a few good ones, and I'm actually a little surprised he's not closing it out, because I feel like Parcells could deliver a killer speech, and I'm sure
he's
will.
He's charismatic.
Okay, so that is it for this week of the ATL podcast, our first full week, so that was pretty good. So again, yeah, download and subscribe on the iTunes page or however you get content. And we will be back next week with three more shows.